Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Peter Schiff, again, with another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. We do this show every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can hear it on shortwave radio 5.07 megahertz or on my website at www.europac.net, www.europac.net. And again, the number to call in, this is a call-in program. I invite all the clients who are listening, any of the clients, potential clients, first-time listeners, long-time listeners, to call in, ask a question. Feel free to interject a new topic if it's something that's on your mind. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. I think the lines are open right now, so feel free to call in. Anyway, before we get into some of the topics of today's show, just talk a little bit about what's going on. You know, on the schedule, again, we're getting closer to the Orlando Money Show. The Money Show is coming up on February 9th. So just got a few more weeks left. If you haven't signed up for it, you can sign up on my website, get a flight down there to Florida, and join us in Orlando. It should be good. I'm giving three workshops, and I do the bull and bear debate with Joe Battipaglia and Lou Navalier, and I've got a two-hour client-only conference, which is becoming something I do at all these money shows. Everybody really likes them who's attended. So it's a great opportunity to meet some other Euro Pacific Capital clients and just kind of have a more of an intimate conversation. We normally get about 30 clients or so together in a room. But anyway, you got to sign up for that. If you want to go to it, make sure you contact the office, get on the list, find out where it's going to be. But the Money Show on February 9th in Orlando. Got a couple of upcoming television appearances that I know about. I will be on Fox News tomorrow, sometime between 4 and 5 p.m., I think closer around 4:15, but I'm not positive. But it's Neil Cavuto, Your World with Neil Cavuto. I'm not really sure what I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to be a guest on probably a small segment like I did last week. I don't know if the one I did last week is on the website yet. Last I checked, it wasn't there. But I was on his show last week. Also, I will be on Bulls and Bears again this Saturday. And as long as, I was on it, I think, 2 weeks ago. No, I was on, 2 weeks ago I was on the other Neil Cavuto show they ended up moving it from Saturday to Sunday because of Saddam Hussein's execution. So as long as there's no big news event, this show, Bulls and Bears, will be on Fox News, not local Fox, but Fox News, on Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time. So I know it's kind of early for you guys on the West Coast, but you can set your DVD recorders or VCRs for 7:30 but Pacific Time. But this time I'm going to be on the entire half hour. When I was on the first time on Bulls and Bears, which was about a month ago, I think, I just came in for one segment on real estate. But, they really liked it. And so now, they're having me on as one of the guests to be on the show for the entire time. I think this is a very good for me in Fox. I mean, now I was on Fox for the first time like a month ago. And this is going to be my fifth time. I'll be on Fox TV five times in a month. And it just shows, you know, once you kind of break in, you know, I think when I did the show the first time, I got a few emails from people saying, hey, I love you on Fox. They'll never, too bad they'll never have you on again, which is always somebody's reaction. You know, when they see me on there and I say something that's different or that they agree with and I come on and I tell it like it is or they agree with me, their first, you know, impression is that, oh, they'll never let me on again. But no, they like it. I mean, they've invited me on. I mean, here, this is going to be my second time on Bulls and Bears, and I did the other show, Cavuto on Business, and then I've done, and so I would have done Cavuto's show three times and Bulls and Bears twice. That's five times. I mean, I don't see that many other people doing it as often as I am. So I think now that I'm on, the producers like it. So people are generally jump to the conclusion that there's some kind of big conspiracy out there on the part of the media to keep people like me out. And I think that the truth of the matter is there's just very few people that have my point of view that have the attention of the producers. Because once, you know, they have an opportunity to actually meet somebody and have somebody on the air that's coming from this perspective, they're more than happy to have them on. So I think the main reason that you don't see too many people like me on these news shows, whether it's on Bloomberg or CNBC or now Fox, is because there just aren't too many people that have my opinion in this profession. There are certainly people like this around the world, I mean, around the country. I mean, I know that. I mean, I get emails all the time, and there are people, you know, that aren't in Wall Street. Now, there are people, you know, believe it or not, I actually occasionally get telephone calls or emails from other brokers who just send me a note that says, yeah, you know, I really enjoy seeing you or reading your stuff. I agree with you 100%, you know. So there are brokers like that, but they just can't go on these television shows. Because remember, if you're a broker, you know, and you work for one of the major firms, they don't let you go on television. You know, I used to work at Shearson Lehman years and years ago. And then I knew you couldn't even talk to the press. I mean, if somebody called me up out of the blue and wanted to know what I thought about something, I couldn't say anything. I would have been fired. The only people who are allowed to speak when you work for one of these firms are people that they designate as being allowed to give a quote to a news reporter or to make an appearance on a television show and express an opinion and attach it to, you know, Bear Stearns or Merrill Lynch or Goldman Sachs. So there are brokers out there who feel like I do and probably would go on television and say some of the same things that I say, but they just can't. They're just not allowed to do it. You know, so you have to be, you know, an independent, you know, to be able to go on these shows and say the stuff that I am. I mean, obviously, if I worked at one of the major wirehouses, there's no way that they would ever let me on television and say the things that I'm saying. You know, it would contradict, you know, too much of what other analysts of the firms are saying. So it's just curious that so many people jump to these conclusions. They think it's like if somehow I got on, I slipped through the cracks. They didn't know what they were dealing with, and now that they see what I said, well, you know, they'll never let me on. I just think they care about ratings. You know, these guys, I mean, the producers of these shows, they don't even know anything about the markets. I mean, they just want people to watch the show. They want a lively discussion. They want a debate, you know. And so if someone comes on and says something different and riles up everybody else, that's good television. And that's one thing that happens when I go on one of these shows is everybody unites against me. And, you know, and I could usually get somebody, you know, so it's interesting. People like to watch it. So anyway, tomorrow at 4 o'clock Eastern, sometime between 4 and 5, Your World with Neil Cavuto. And then on Saturday, and that's a tape show. I tape that show on Friday. So I tape the show on Friday, but you can see it on Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific time. One other personal note or business note on the company, one of our representatives resigned today, Daryl Payton. Good guy, is, you know, one of the original three people that I hired when I opened up the Darien office when I first came out here. Nice guy. Sorry to see him go. I think Daryl basically was tired of driving every day. You know, he commuted every day from Manhattan to our office in Darien. So that was about an hour on the train, and plus, you know, of course you have to get to a train station. So, you know, I guess that was something that he was tired of doing. He's going to be working at E-Trade if anybody's worried where he's going to go. So we wish him well. If you are used to working with Daryl, you know, I got plenty of other brokers that are very knowledgeable in the office that will be able to assist you if you're used to dealing with Daryl. And there's, who knows, you know, we might see him back at some point. I know it is my intention to open up a Manhattan office. I mean, it's something that I do want to do. I just don't, you know exactly when. I mean, we still have, you know, a couple other people that make that daily commute. I know there's some other brokers potentially that might want to join up with me, you know, that live in New York that don't necessarily want to take the train every day out to Connecticut. But anyway, if we do ever open up a New York office, who knows, maybe Daryl will be back. But in the meantime, we wish him well. And as I said, if anybody was working with Daryl, no problem. I mean, we have other competent brokers who understand these stocks, and you know, any one of them, if your account gets reassigned to someone else to assist me, you shouldn't miss a beat. Anyway, let me see if we've got any calls. We don't. So the lines are still open. Let me just repeat the telephone number. Let me get that. It's 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597 to call the show. Now, a lot, I guess, I'd like to talk about during the hour. I want to talk about some of the broader markets, to talk about the gold market, talk about the oil market, talk about the bond market, and the housing market. I think a lot's really going on. Not a lot of people are talking about it. But I do, somebody called in, so before I get into those four markets, let's take the first call from Jerry in Michigan. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hello, Peter. Nice to get through to you.
Sure thing.
I got a question for you about the Canadian Energy Trust. I've heard you explain them from time to time, but I never really got a full understanding of it. And I'm wondering, in today's market, seeing how energy has withdrawn some as far as the pricing of it, would it be a good time to think about the energy trusts in Canada and in particular the Viking?
Well, I mean, it's more than a good time to think about them. It's a good time to buy them because, you know, these things have gotten clobbered not only because of the decline in oil and natural gas. Although natural gas prices have been inching higher. You know, it was in the 20s here today. You know, so the winter is finally in the Northeast.
Right. It's finally arrived.
But, you know, the thing is, it's cold all over the country. I mean, it's cold. It's in California. You know, the citrus crop has been destroyed.
Oh, just absolutely destroyed out there.
And I don't know if people pay attention, but corn prices, it went through the roof on a terrible, terrible crop report on corn. You know, soybeans made a new year high. Finally, the beans had been, you know, in a tank. But what happened is, you know, so many people were planting corn instead of beans because corn was so strong that it ended up we didn't get that many beans, and now the beans are going up. Commodity prices, people are focusing on oil, but we've seen a big jump up in agriculture commodities. Gold was up, you know, Friday was up like $12. It was up $7-$8 today. I mean, gold's looking strong. So, you know, I think commodities in general are kind of turning around, and I expect that oil will turn in here somewhere. You know, is it possible that oil prices can go below 50? I wrote a commentary last week. I thought they could even go to 47, 48 at the extreme. But, you know, there's no guarantee we're going down there. I think we're banging along the bottom. So you're going to get a turnaround in energy. I think natural gas could already have turned a corner. And these energy trusts, these Canadian trusts, were clobbered because of the proposed tax changes to...
Now, didn't that go through, those tax changes?
They haven't gone through. I mean, the odds are they're going to go through.
But not years out yet, right?
Well, even if it gets passed the way Flaherty proposed it, the new taxes don't even take effect for 4 years.
Okay.
But there's a coalition. There are a lot of political forces that are trying to either stop it or change it. And a change might be a longer, you know, a grandfather period.
So in particular, Viking and Harvest Energy Trust, do you still feel favorably about them?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of the ones that we feel favorably about. The best thing to do, if you're interested, is call up and speak to one of the brokers about the trusts that we like. And there are trusts that are, you know, outside of energy, too. I mean, there's a few trusts we were buying that aren't even related to oil and gas. But, you know, they just are organized within that trust framework. And they got clobbered, too. I think all the trusts have gone down too much. Even if the bill, even if it gets passed as proposed, these things are still too cheap. they've more than discounted the impact. Is it a negative? Of course it's a negative. Should the stocks have gone down? Of course they should have gone down.
But they overshot the low market.
They overshot. So, I mean, these things never had less risk. You know, I had an email from somebody recently because I have a report on the Internet, my report on my website about these energy trusts, and I haven't really adjusted it, you know, to reflect these proposals. We're working on another one. I'm doing something, but it's not up there yet. It hasn't been a priority. But someone said, hey, aren't you doing a disservice? You're telling people to buy these stocks, but you're not telling about all the risks associated with the tax change. I said, I don't have to tell them about the risks. The risks are already priced into the stock.
Oh, absolutely. The market priced that in as soon as the word went out.
Yeah, I mean,
another advantage, Peter, wouldn't you say another advantage is holding the trust in, are those denominated in Canadian currency?
Well, of course. They're in Canada. I mean, their earnings are in Canada.
So there's another positive for it.
Yeah, you get to play on the currency. But I think there's never been less risk in these trusts than there are now. Because whenever we bought them, you know, in the past, there was always the risk that the government was going to come out and tax them.
Okay.
And so you always bought it with the risk that they might tax it.
So now the risk is for...
But that risk anymore. Now you have the chance that they might change their mind. So it's already baked into the cake. So
okay.
I think
so
it's
you
great.
Feel that it's also overshot the downside. That's what I was feeling.
Yeah, look, there are stocks. I mean, there's one that I own that, you know, I had almost a triple in it. Or I did have a triple in it in my personal account. And it, within the last week, it was below what I paid for it. I know, I mean, so, and I bought it a lot, you know, so there's some great buys. There's some great buys. So anyone interested, just call our office, you know, 800-727-7922, and, you know, we'll talk to you about the trust we like best and buy them for you.
Well, Peter, thanks so much. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Okay, bye.
And I've got also John on the phone from Massachusetts. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I'm not a client. But I'm a prospective client, and I listen.
That.
And I wanna ask you probably a tired question, but it's one I haven't heard addressed lately. What happens for your clients in the wake of a major terrorist attack in the United States?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming my clients are not physically involved in the attack.
No, I mean with their investments.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you what happened the last time there was a major terrorist attack, which was at the World Trade Centers.
And things went down here. And how did your holdings around the globe fare?
They actually did pretty well. I mean, in fact, some of my best purchases I made during the week of that the U.S. market was closed. Of course, all the foreign markets were open.
Right.
And I basically was buying two stocks. All week long, a gold company called Newcrest Mining and an oil company called Santos in Australia. And those stocks, I think the oil stock is five times what it was, and the gold stock is like eight or ten times what it was. So, you know, we were able to make some good buys in the wake of 9/11. I didn't see any drops, really, in any of our stocks. I think the dollar went down, which, you know, was a positive for us. I mean,
well, it did, and gold, of course, shot up.
Well, yeah, it didn't shoot up right away, though.
I mean, not right away.
Much, but
would you consider it? I mean, this sounds kind of terrible, but would you consider it a tremendous buying opportunity for stocks in the U.S. because of the panic people made? You know, they may drop as they did after 9/11. Do you see a repeat?
I would not be looking for opportunities to buy U.S. stocks. Even if U.S. stocks were to drop 20%, they'd still be expensive. And, you know, a terrorist attack, depending on how bad it is, I mean, it could be the pin that pricks this bubble.
Right, and since...
Problems that are not terrorist-related. They have to do with other underlying fundamental problems of the U.S. economy. A terrorist attack... could expose those problems because, you know, we have no money. We only have money that we can borrow from the rest of the world. And we're
right.
able to deal with problems only because we can borrow money from the Chinese or borrow money from the Japanese. And, you know, who knows?
Well, with the dollar collapse, I mean, since the U.S. is so integral to the world economy, what happens to the foreign holdings that you deal so heavily in?
Well, obviously, if the dollar goes down, all of our foreign holdings would go up. I mean, that's the whole idea.
Yeah.
Our holdings are in foreign currency. So, if a terrorist attack is a catalyst that causes the dollar to drop by 10 or 20%, all else being equal, our portfolios will go up by 10 or 20%. You know, if the terrorist attack, you know, does something to the price of gold, you know, then our gold investments will do well, or oil or oil investments will do well. But I think the U.S. economy has a number of problems facing it. Potential terrorist attacks are one of them, but they're not the biggest one. But a terrorist attack could end up being, you know, the final nail in the coffin.
Well, psychologically, you know, I think it shakes a lot of people's faith in a lot of things. And
but people need to look, people need to reassess their understanding of the United States and its real role in the U.S. economy. And I tell you, a good way to do that is to buy my book. I mean, the book that I just wrote, it's coming out in late February. You can order it on my website now. Crash Proof: How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. Most of that book is basically dedicated to explaining the U.S. economy and piercing a lot of the myths about what it is and what our real role is in the global economy and how the world would change if we had a major economic collapse here. And so that book, I mean, that book is a good book for really understanding the situation. And, you know, so you can order it on my site and, you know, you can have it in your hands, you know, before the end of February.
Are you heavy into mining companies? Is that part of your thing?
I am, personally. I mean, clients depend on the client. Oh, also, if you come to the Money Show, the Orlando Money Show, the books will be there, and I will be signing books at the Money Show, and that'll probably be at least 2 or 3 weeks before they're available in the bookstores. But we will have copies at the Orlando Money Show.
I understand about the owning commodities, but buying stock in a mining company, you know, I mean, there's a lot of factors other than simply the price of gold.
Well, you're right. You're right. And you know, and we don't just blanketly buy all mining companies or mining companies that we like and those that, you know, that we don't buy. But, you know, just we need to talk to a broker. You know, if you're specifically interested in mining stocks, probably the most knowledgeable broker in my office on the mining stocks is James Phipps in the Darien office, the 800-727-7922. He's a great guy to talk about mining stocks with.
How are those? One thing that I came across in looking at some of your stuff that really caught my eye was the water that you had the Singapore and English charts on the
recently on a couple of water plays. Yeah, I looked at Singapore. In fact, that one in I had a client. I just, you know, that one in High Flux that we were buying in Singapore in the last week or two is up about 15%. Because I remember we were buying that stock; it had been on decline. I think it's certainly turned around.
It certainly has, and it's well. That's what really caught my eye in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I was surprised because I just bought some for a guy, and he was like, all of a sudden, needed to sell it. And I was like, well, you just bought it. I was about to take the commission away because I felt bad until I realized how much money he made. And I said, well, okay, I guess I can charge it.
Do you see that as a long-term type of just constantly being a place, being that's the place to be in the future? Are you really leaning more towards kind of this water monopoly type thing?
Yeah, well, look, in general, I like investing in Asia, and I think that whole, you know, water is a good area to invest in. But look, I don't like to talk too much about individual companies. I think it's a little bit more on the boring side for the audience. But what you need to do is get an account set up and just call us up and talk individually with the brokers about, you know, the particular companies that we like and why we like them. And the general idea, though, is not to own dollar assets. Don't own U.S. stocks. Don't own U.S. bonds. Don't own U.S. cash. Don't own anything here because it's all going to go down. The dollar is going to lose value, and anything you own denominated in dollars or dollars themselves are going to lose value in that you're going to need a lot more dollars to buy the same stuff. So if you want to protect your purchasing power and preserve your wealth, you got to get into foreign assets. There's just no other way to do it.
Do you believe it'll be almost overnight?
I think when the dollar does finally collapse, you know, significant percentages of the collapse will happen very quickly. That's generally how it is. You know, you don't have a lot of time to think about it. So you've got to get yourself protected in advance. It's going to be very difficult. I compare it to, you know, you got to have fire insurance in advance. You can't wait till your house is burning and then try to call up and get an insurance policy.
Well, you know, we're listening to you, and I think the people that take the time to listen, they're already mentally on board, you know.
Well, you got to get, it's important to get physically on board. It's not going to do anything to you financially when the dollar collapses. And if you have all your money in dollars and then you go broke and you say, well, I thought about calling up Peter and saying,
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, hey, you know, I almost avoided this disaster. I thought about it, but, you know, I mean, that's not going to do you any good. It's actually doing something about it that's the difference.
Well, Peter, it was good to talk to you, and I think I'll be calling a rep.
Look forward.
In the near future.
The next time you call, you'll be a client.
You know, that's right.
Okay, John.
All right, thank you.
Let me take, I got one more call on hold, but let me break for a quick commercial. So in case John didn't get the phone number, or any of you didn't, you can grab it from this commercial break. We'll be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. Anyway, before I take this next caller, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the gold market. Before I forget, but, you know, I think gold has traded very, very well recently. You know, with a big drop in crude we had a little bit of a bounce in the dollar, and the whole time gold really held up. I mean, they tried to sell it off a couple of times, and it's rallied. No one's really talking about it. I think it looks good. I think the chart looks good that we've turned around. I think gold heads higher. You know, and even oil, a lot of the oil stocks, too, over the last a few trading sessions. Oil's made a couple of new lows, but the oil stocks have not. Maybe that's a divergence there. Maybe there's a bottom coming in. I said the other commodities, agricultural commodities, corn, wheat, beans, have been very, very strong. Nobody's really talking about that. You know, we got the PPI number that came out today. The jump in producer prices was quite a bit more than what people were looking for. Not that I put any stock in these government numbers. Tomorrow we get the CPI. We'll see what that number is. But I think gold's looking good. And apart from the individual gold stocks, you know, we also sell a regular physical precious metals through the Perth Mint program in Australia. And if you're not familiar with the Perth Mint, you can go to my website, and I have information there, www.europac.net, the Perth Mint. Or there's a web address specifically for the Perth Mint, and that address is www.goldyoucanfold.com. goldyoucanfold.com. And there's more information on the Perth Mint. It's a great way to buy gold, silver, and platinum. Anyway, let's take Sam, who's on the line from Florida. Go ahead, Sam.
I like your show. I like your website, and I think you're doing a great job. I just began opening an account with you guys. I had two quick questions. One was with the rising stock market. And I'm wondering what you might think of how that is attributed. And then the other issue that I kind of found interesting is an article on LouRockwell.com by Gary North. He's a pretty level-headed person. He believes that, the safest bet right now is to buy bonds and then position yourself for gold later. He had an interesting article versus Dow versus gold. I found it kind of interesting, so I wanted to get your take or thoughts about that.
Well, I don't know why the stock market is going up. You know, it's people are buying it despite you know, lousy underlying fundamentals. I think people are just oblivious to really what's going on. There certainly is a lot of inflation, and that's probably one of the impetuses for stock prices moving higher. It's the same thing that's causing prices in general to move higher. But I do expect this rally to run out of steam at some point. But, you know, U.S. stocks are still underperforming basically stocks and any other developed market anywhere in the world. So people who think they're getting richer in U.S. stocks, on a relative basis, they're actually getting poorer because, you know, they're not keeping pace with equities in other countries, especially when you factor in the exchange rates. Now, on bonds, and I'm glad you even mentioned bonds because I've, you know, been watching the bond market, and there hasn't really been a lot of talk about it, but bonds have been steadily dropping in price, and yields have been rising rather consistently. You know, if you look at where the yield, like, for example, on the 10-year, back in December, on December 1st of 06, the yields were down at 4.4. Now they're 4.8. That's a pretty big move. I mean, 400 basis point move from 4.4 to 4.8. And it looks like they're going higher. I mean, I think if you look at a chart on a 10-year, I think that, you know, before the year is over, you know, we're going to be up, you know, 5.25 at a minimum, even if there's no major problem. I think once we break through 5.25, then I think it's clear sailing on the yields all the way up. The next resistance on yield will be around 6.25, 6.30. That's a huge move from 4.80. And I think that could easily happen. I mean, that could easily happen next year. It could even happen this year, but I think that's going to happen. I think once we move higher. I mean, I think bonds are a terrible place to be. I don't know why Gary North would be recommending them. Now, remember, I mean, Gary North was one of the people who was, you know, hunkered down in a foxhole somewhere thinking that the world was going to end on Y2K. So he's been a little bit of alarmist, but I mean, overall, he's a good guy. I mean, I've read his Remner review and a lot of things that he says, but owning bonds doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, all bonds are is future promises to pay dollars. And, you know, that's worse than owning dollars today, right? Owning receipts for dollars tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, the thing that really concerns me, and I think it hasn't even been discussed by anybody from the media, is not just the Iraq war or the housing or all this inflation that's being created by the Federal Reserve, but the big issue is going to be these baby boomers when they retire. You know, they're going to have no place to sell their stock because there's less
issue.
People than there are. I mean, there's more retirees than there are people actually working.
Well, let me finish. The reason that's going to be an issue is because the baby boomer is not going to retire. No, they're going to have to work until they drop dead. That's the unfortunate reality, is that they have no savings. And they think they're going to retire on these phony promises from government trust funds that don't exist, or from phony stock market values, or from, you know, phony real estate home equity. The reality is people in the baby boom are not going to retire. Fortunately, we have a pretty good health care system to keep them alive so they can work into their 80s and 90s. But, you know, if people right now who are, you know, 45, 50, that have money in, you know, in the Treasury bonds or U.S. stocks or counting on Social Security, if they think they're going to spend their golden years on the golf course, you know, they got another thing coming.
No, but the other thing that not scares me, because I'm never scared, I never panic anyways, but the thing that's alarming is these social programs are set to, they're coming to fruition. I mean, you hear about 20 years ago all these commissions, you know, being set forth to, you know, find a way to, balance the budget to these entitlements. Well, now they're coming because these people are, the baby boomers are set to retire. It's going to be a mess.
Well, it's going to be a mess, but all these commissions are phony. Politicians just create these commissions to make it look like they're doing something, but it's all a bunch. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's a show. Nothing's ever going to get done. You know, they're just going to do what they can to try to postpone the day of reckoning, and eventually they can't postpone it, and it's going to hit the fan.
Now, hopefully they'll be wrong.
People aren't going to retire. there's no way. You can only retire on savings. Unfortunately, we don't have any. Americans haven't been saving. And you can't retire on home equity. That's a myth because, you know, how? You have to borrow against your home equity. From who, you know? Or you have to sell your house. And if everybody tries to sell their house, what happens to the home equity? It evaporates in a puff of smoke. Because it's there if nobody sells.
let me ask you this question. Do people really live off of their home equity and expect that? I mean,
a lot of people who are planning on retiring, for example, let's say somebody lives in one of the bubble areas like California or up in the Northeast, what their plan is when they retire, they sell their $2 million house that has $1 million mortgage on it, and they sell that and they buy a $200,000 or $300,000 house in Phoenix somewhere, or Scottsdale, or down in New York. If they have a $200,000 or $300,000 house, they figure, okay, I'll buy, you know, a $600,000 house down in Florida, and everybody thinks the difference is part of their retirement. You know, well, you know, people are going to find out that they don't have that equity. You know, that the price when they go to sell, it's not going to be worth what they think it's worth. But there are also people today, you know, younger people that actually do live off their home equity right now because they extract it in the form of home equity loans, and then they use the money to buy food, to buy gasoline, to buy vacations, to remodel. People are living off their home equity, and then there's a lot of people who, you know, who would normally save money, but instead of saving, they spend everything they earn because they figure, why save? I've got my house doing the saving for me. So it's really influenced American behavior dramatically in the last few years.
Appreciate your time, and thanks for your opinions.
Sure thing. Anyway, we've got a few more calls on hold. But, you know, before I think I take the next couple of callers, I wanted to talk, too, a little bit about the housing market. Because we've seen a lot more news coming out in the housing market recently. A few more of the home builders came out with some very disappointing numbers. Well, for some reason, the home builder stocks actually were up today. But I think if you really look at the news that we're getting, particularly from some of the subprime lenders, I mean, credit is really, really contracting. It's getting very difficult now for people to borrow money in the subprime sector. A year ago, somebody who would have been able to borrow, you know, with zero down, now they can't do that anymore. They need a 10% down payment. I mean, interest rates are rising. What's really happening in the home lending market is we're getting a return to traditional lending standards. We're not there yet, but we're on our way. You know, for a while, lenders were confused. They thought, well, we don't need down payments. We don't need documented loans. These are old-fashioned. But the reason that it worked for a while is because real estate prices were rising. And as prices were rising, nobody was going into foreclosure because even if you couldn't make your payments, well, you had your home ATM that you can borrow against. And so if your income wasn't sufficient to make your payments, you can always borrow your way out of trouble or, worst case, sell your house for a profit. But now that home prices are flattening out or, in fact, falling, the lenders are starting to see losses, they're starting to get worried, and they're starting to reimpose lending standards. And as we move towards traditional lending standards, the next thing we do is we move towards traditional pricing of real estate. And that would require a dramatic decline, just to get real estate prices back to where they would normally be based on current levels of income and the available rents in the rental market. And, of course, if real estate prices were to drop to that degree, there would be a massive recession, and all the foreclosures that would result would cause prices not to just get back to a normal level, but to become insanely cheap. And, you know, I can see just in local anecdotal examples, I was looking at a rental house the other day, and it was a little pricey, and I'm not going to rent this house. But from a comparison point of view, the guy was looking to rent this house for $14,000, an expensive rental. But compared to, you know, what he was offering it at, he was trying to sell it for $3.5 million. And I talked to the broker, and he had bought that house in 2001, and he spent $1 million fixing it up. He originally put it on the market for $5 million about a year and a half ago. Hasn't had a single offer. He had just reduced it to $3.5 million and offered to rent it. I tried to rent it for quite a bit less than he was renting it for. He didn't want to do it, but then he offered to sell it to me. He was, well, if you want to buy it, I'll take $3.25 million. So he was already down to $3.25 million. The guy is into the house for $4.25 million. So he's willing to lose $1 million on a house he bought 5 years ago. Now people think, well, how could, you know, real estate's gone up so much, how is he going to lose $1 million? And he still can't sell. You know, but obviously this house, he thought this house was worth $5 million when he put it on the market a year and a half ago. Now, who knows what the house is ultimately going to sell for? But prices are dropping a lot more than people know. But anecdotally, when you go out there and look around, I've heard lots of stories from people individually about housing prices and people putting their house on the market now, and they can't even sell them for 20, 30% less than similar houses were getting, you know, a year or two ago. Anyway, I've got a few more calls on the line. Let's take the first one, Sam from Florida. Go ahead, Sam. Is Sam there? Okay, Harold from Colorado. You around?
Thanks, Peter. Nice show. Peter, I'm a very satisfied client, but I do have a question for you. When do you expect you will be offering some exposure into the Latin America markets?
Well, I mean, we always offer it. The question is, when are we going to recommend it?
Well, I guess that's my question then.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, in general, avoiding Latin America. I mean, maybe that's wrong to do that. I mean, there's probably individual ideas. I just always thought there were a lot of problems down there. You know, it's hard for me to tell clients, hey, you got to get your money out of the dollar and put it in the peso or any peso. They've had so many problems down there with inflation and irresponsible politicians, and you've got a lot of, you know, I mean, I just thought that I don't want to jump out of the frying pan and end up in the fire.
Right.
The whole philosophy in general has been, you know, the U.S. is in trouble, the dollar's in trouble, we need to protect ourselves against these risks, so let's seek out safety in other mature developed markets. So most of what we're doing is not in the emerging type markets, but in the mature developed markets of Europe and Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I'm concentrating. There could be some great opportunities down there, but I think there's a lot more risk. And given my outlook and what I'm asking people to do, I'm not looking for risk. I'm looking to avoid risk.
Right.
And, you know, even, you know, a lot of people, like one of I was on CNBC a few weeks ago, and Steve Leisman, you know, we were talking about the returns, and he acknowledged that, yes, you know, clients, people did better investing abroad than they did in the United States. But he said on a risk-adjusted basis, you know, it was better to invest here. And I had to disagree because the traditional opinion is that, well, we have to judge risk based on volatility to the dollar. And I think the U.S. dollar is where all the risk is. And I actually think that my clients who are investing in Asia and Europe are taking less risk than the people who are investing in the United States.
Well, my point or my questioning comes from the standpoint that, you know, Brazil is tremendously resource rich, and their government has stabilized at least the last few years. And of course, Argentina has to be a good place to get value for one's risk.
Yeah, look,
there just has to
be
some good
plays
down there,
risk opportunities down there. They have a lot of resources. Of course, the resources aren't very valuable if the government takes them away from you.
Right.
Or raises taxes to such a point to make, you know, so I don't know. I mean at some point we might start nibbling down there, but I haven't done it yet. I've preferred to get my resources in Canada. Although look, we got burned there. They raised taxes. Also a lot of it in Australia and in Asia.
One point on Canada, and you probably have noticed, but you know, when Canada made that law switch, that's when the Canadian dollar started really taking it hard, and what fell from 89 down to its present 85 level. So a tremendous amount of capital fled out of Canada, and I think they're going to realize that, and that's going to help them resolve what they're really going to do on that tax problem.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, whatchamacallit, the government in Thailand tried to do something pretty foolish.
Exactly.
Robert, and they changed their mind immediately.
Exactly. Well, anyhow, good show, and I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate your business.
Yeah.
Anyway, I know we have one more guy hanging on, but let me play the last commercial break, and we'll be back for the final segment and the last phone calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk.
Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back, and I've got Larry on the line from Orlando. How you doing, Larry?
I'm fine, Peter. How are you?
Good. Are you going to come to the Money Show?
Oh, of course. I've been there. I've seen you the last 2 years. Hey, listen, I just have a comment that might be interesting for your listening guests regarding the spread between the U.S. dollar and the euro. In 2005 Christmas, I bought a bottle of Dom Perignon here for $100. I just bought one this Christmas, a year later, for $137.
At the same store?
Same store, same product, same bottle, same everything from France, okay? So that's how much money you're losing on your dollar. And my question would be, though, what do you think, Bernanke or the Fed is going to drop rates? Because that's all I see on TV. They may drop it to try and salvage some of this housing market.
No, because I think ultimately they might have to, but it's not going to salvage the housing market. I mean, eventually when they start to appreciate the degree of the decline, politicians are going to want to do something about it. But unfortunately, there's nothing they can do, because just lowering interest rates isn't going to be enough. Because once the market is in decline, the lenders aren't going to want to loan people, you know, five times what they earn, 10 times what they earn to buy a house. It doesn't matter what the interest rate is. People still can't afford to make the payments.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, they're not going to have, they're going to be tightening up on credit. People are going to be requiring down payments. So even if you have a low interest rate, but if the lenders require a 10% down payment, how are you going to borrow? How are you going to buy a house if you don't have the down payment?
That's,
you know, all these lending standards that are going to be returning are going to be pricing people out of the market. So lower interest rates isn't going to do it. Probably the only way it's going to happen is if the Federal Reserve prints a bunch of money and gives it to people so they can afford to buy houses. But of course, you know, it's just going to be hyperinflation. So I think, I don't know if they're going to get around to lowering rates eventually. But my best guess is they're going to do nothing for as long as possible, because I think the Fed is afraid to do anything. I think if they raise rates, which is what they should be doing because of inflation and money supply and the dollar, they risk, you know, pushing the housing market over the edge, that the cliff that it's now teetering on, and turning and reversing the rally in the stock market and bringing a recession on faster once they change the psychology, because everybody is hoping for a rate cut. If they disappoint them and actually raise rates, that's going to be a problem.
You know, what
the other hand, if they lower rates, that's going to, I think, open up the floodgates for selling in the dollar, which could also cause a lot of problems.
Yeah.
So I think the Fed is in a box. Best thing they can do is nothing and hope everything is okay.
Yeah.
But the minute they do something, they're going to upset the apple cart some way.
Yeah.
And so I think they're going to do nothing for as long as possible.
Yeah, in Florida here, you know, the insurance premiums for catastrophic insurance for housing it's very, very expensive now, and that's hurting the buyers. Also, the county governments are getting stressed because they don't have enough income. And what they've done now here locally, here at least in Orlando, is when a new buyer buys a house, it's not on an assessed value. You pay taxes on the purchase price of the house. So the purchase price of the house in combination with the high taxes for insurance are stopping a lot of the buying as well.
Of course. I mean, other things increase the cost of home ownership, the fees and things of that nature. But in Florida is already, I mean, I remember reading an article, it was on my website, but about, I think a woman had, I don't know, a dozen or more properties, maybe 20 properties in Florida. I forget where in Florida, but she ended up, you know, putting them all up and selling them all at a big auction.
Yeah, sure.
And the prices that she were getting on some of the properties was like 40% below what she paid.
And this wasn't a foreclosure auction. This wasn't like, you know, the forced sale. She decided on her own to try to auction off a bunch of her properties, and that's what she got.
Okay, yeah, wow, boy. Ouch.
You know, and some of the buyers, interestingly enough, were speculators. They interviewed some of the buyers and said, well, yeah, it's down 40%. I'll take a shot at it. Still, it wasn't a real buyer who wanted the house to live in it. It was someone trying to gamble on it going up.
Peter, this speculative mania down here in Miami is amazing. People were buying condos over the phone, sight unseen.
Oh, I know. Well, you had
in droves.
It's still up there, condoflip.com.
That's right, and they're still
people
building.
People were buying multiple ones. People were buying two and three and four.
Yeah, half.
Oh, I mean,
this
is the biggest. The real estate mania is the biggest mania we've had. It's amazing that, you know, I mean, the Nasdaq bubble was big, but this is even bigger.
Wow.
And it happened right after it, and it's just amazing. You know, I heard an interview on CNBC today, and somebody was, you know, talking about, you know, the housing bubble bursting and how the problem with it, and then. One of the regulars, you know, interrupted him and said, "You know, you're talking about the housing bubble like it's a fact. Now, that's just your opinion. There are a lot of people that don't think there's a bubble. It's not. It is a fact. I mean, it's amazing that people think, well, it's just a matter of opinion. It isn't a matter of opinion. There was a bubble. That's a matter of fact. The bubble is now burst. That's also a fact.
Yeah.
All the air hasn't come out of it yet. You know, and how bad it's going to be, we'll see. But it was a bubble and it has burst. And those are facts. They're not opinions." You know,
and
people want to deny that. They want to pretend that, you know, real estate prices can stay where they are. They can't. They can't stay where they are. The only reason they got where they were was because of the lax lending standards, the temporarily low teaser rates. Those rates are never going to be here again, where people get, you know, where you can have a 1% or 2% mortgage for the first 2 or 3 years and they, you know, negatively amortize the loan. I mean, those things aren't coming back. But because of those temporary low rates, because of no down payments, no documentation loans, where people could lie about their income, people were able to speculate on property. And people didn't care what a house was worth. Let's say it was worth $200,000. It didn't matter. You were willing to pay $400,000 for it because it was going to be $500,000 the following year.
Yeah.
None of it mattered. And I said people didn't even care about what houses cost because they didn't cost anything. Because if you bought a house, you know, for $500,000 and you expected it to be worth $600,000 next year, if it cost you $40,000 to make the mortgage payments for a year, it didn't cost you anything because the appreciation equaled $100,000. So the cost of owning it was negative $60,000. You were paid $60,000. So when people were getting paid to buy houses, nobody worried about the cost. But once houses flatten out or start to go down, people start thinking twice about the mortgage payments and the property taxes and the insurance because now these are real costs that they have to bear out of their income. They just can't refinance it and extract it out of their appreciated equity.
Right. And you hate to be the last guy to buy it.
Yeah, prices have to go way down. There's no way to stop it. No way.
Oh, okay. Well, Pete, I thank you, and I'll see you next week or next month.
Okay, yeah, it's just in a few weeks. We'll see you down there in Orlando, and you can get an autographed copy of my book.
Attaboy.
I'm not sure how many copies are shipping down there, so make sure you're early.
Load the van.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's just amazing, as I said, how many people, you know, refuse to acknowledge the enormity of this bubble and the problem there's going to be in the aftermath of the bursting. I mean, people just completely underestimate not only the size of the real estate bubble, but its impact on the economy. And I don't know how they can do that. I mean, because it's so obvious. It's so obvious where all the consumption has been coming from. But when you have a negative savings rate for two consecutive years, I mean, every single month, yet people are spending money like crazy. Where's it coming from, right? It's coming from money that they borrowed. Where are they getting? What's the collateral? Their house. I mean, it's just so obvious. And all the employment and all the economic activity or theoretical activity that comes as a result of people thinking they're wealthy because they own homes and ignoring the mortgages that they have and the debt that they have and the fact that they got to service these debts. None of these debts mean anything when your real estate is rising in value faster than your debts are accumulated because you think that your net worth is appreciating. But the minute you turn that situation around, you know, it's a dramatic turn, a dramatic turn. And there's nothing out there that can offset this. I mean, people think, oh, well, housing will turn down, so something else will just come back to take its place. What? There is nothing else. It's impossible. It's impossible for something else to take its place. But anyway, we got about 5 more minutes left. I probably don't have time to take any calls. Remember, last time I wasn't paying any attention, and I got cut off. So now I gotta make sure I don't do that this time. But we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks in the markets. As I said, it looks to me like the precious metals market could be in for a major move up. No one's really talking about it. I think we still have a lot of bearishness out there from the last correction. And I think the fact that the gold price has held up, it's very encouraging. We'll see with oil. Did we bottom out? It's tough to know. I think the natural gas prices stopped falling. I think we might have seen the lows in natural gas. Oil can't be too far below. So any of the buys in these sectors should be good. And, you know, no one's really talking about grains and commodities right now because they all are focused on the price of oil. And they see the big drop, you know, from almost $80 a barrel down to $50 a barrel. I mean, a huge drop. It's created a lot of bearishness out there. And I think that's just what the market needs to really move to a new high. You know, I think a lot of hedge funds out there are now short in oil and gas. I think there are. I think there's a lot of big shorts out there, and I think this is going to create some tremendous short covering. Because once these markets turn, I think some of these funds that got short are going to be very surprised at how difficult it's going to be to cover these short positions and how much they're going to have to pay. Because I think the real market, the real physical market, is going to push prices much, much higher. So when you have these speculators trying to compete with real users, for crude prices, you can see a big, big increase very, very rapidly in the price of oil and gas. Also, I think next week we've got the President's State of the Union address. We're also going to see the Democratic response. This is going to be the first State of the Union and Democratic response with the Democrats in control of the House and the Senate. So it'll be interesting to see, how the State of the Union differs this time. Is Bush going to be tough? What's he going to say? What are the Democrats going to say? I don't know that it's actually going to mean anything. I think this is one of the topics that we're going to have on Bulls and Bears on Saturday.